precious time. Our first question is, today in the world, we're witnessing a huge surge in independent media and alternative news sources who are seeking to wake up the masses regarding the realities of our political scene, specifically concerning some of the shadow governments and some of the, you know, rogue elite forces who are ruling the masses with impunity as such. So what message would you have for those who are tuning into these messages, these truth seekers who are seeking to come to a higher level of reality?
Well, I mean, means one aspect, you'd have to start with the those who are presenting this truth, is that the more that they, means truth is also definable by the individual. Means you may have an absolute truth, but then the individual's truth, then you have the aspect of what they call truth. So someone may say the political element is not good, so therefore anything political is bad. Someone else understands that politics is necessary to some degree, so it's used, so it's good. Others then take it to the extreme, and then again it starts to become bad. Because so, in that, it's a matter of when they're dealing, they have to see that there's a proper balance between them presenting what they're uncovering and finding as the truth, and also their element of, how you say, making money. Right? You need money to be able to survive, so that's a fact. But they have to be very careful, is that traditionally, truth isn't sold. You know what I'm saying? It's your priest would do the education, these kind of things. So real knowledge meant that there was a need of faith and understanding, surrender, service. That was the payment. So they have to see that it's not necessarily just a business. Otherwise, then their truth has to be adjusted with what's popular, because that way they'll get their money. So that would mean them. So they have to be careful of that. So those who are then seeking the truth have to see that those who are presenting this knowledge have more of an understanding. Or they have to be able themselves to pick and choose what's valuable or not. Then in this, then for those that are, then they, you know, found their sources, they are interacting, they're going to have to then be able to apply it to the particular situation, because...
Can I hold that much? Just put a sign of a tractor or something coming in. It's coming in quite loud and strong, like an engine. Just give it a second. It's just driving away.
No, I think it's just dumping the dirt now.
Oh, is it?
Okay. I think when they drive away, they'll be more quiet. Okay, it sounds like they stop. No, they'll unload it, then they'll turn around and then go out.
Okay, we'll carry on then.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, then the seeker has to understand some of the elements that you're dealing with. It means you have the reality of your general populace. Mm-hmm. And much of them are not necessarily so interested in what's going on. They just want to day-to-day be able to live their lives as peacefully and as prosperously and as comfortably, happily as possible. You know, just basic human necessity. Then you have those who are more conscious of that. They'll generally, and in conscious, they're generally more conscious of the intellectual aspects of human interaction, the political, social, arts, economics, these things, which are what most people aren't so interested in, right? Your most popular kinds of media will probably be, you know, tabloids and other kinds of things like that that are more into gossip and, you know, celebrities and disasters and this kind of stuff like that. So that keeps them busy. That more is money, because they don't require it, but somebody can make money off of it. But this thing of where you're trying to educate, but the education must be not to scare, not to make them afraid, though it'll be used as a method to wake them up. But the problem is when the populace is woken up and it's scared, you don't know where it'll run. And the population, because they need security, they will run to security. So the tendency is, as they were not awake before, when they wake up, they will naturally be more comfortable asleep as they were. So they're going to have to find some place that makes them comfortable. So not necessarily being so well educated, because if the education has to be complete enough that they can function and make a proper choice, they may choose some other situation to be comfortable in that's not necessarily any better than the one they were in before. So that's why it's very important that awakening must be through knowledge, not through fear or through shock. It can maybe be used as a touch to start the process, but the working principle has to be the knowledge, not the fear of what's going to happen if you don't get behind this, because otherwise that's just as political. So the problem, economic problems, political problems, social problems, those are solved with proper understanding, proper knowledge, proper practice. Means you may have to use the medium of politics, but you have to understand it's your medium. But what has to be delivered is knowledge. Does that make sense? So then, in doing that, then you have to see is that, why we're discussing that, is that you have to have knowledge in a community. Right? People have to be educated. They have to have a background of some kind of bodies of knowledge to be able to function. At the same time, is that whole social scene must be managed. Mm-hmm. On this simple village level, just the group leaders get together, it'll run. But when you're dealing with you know, countries and nations and like that, then it takes more management. Mm-hmm. So in that, naturally, your politics has to be that it's for the benefit of the people, in that how to create the best, safest environment in which they can have the greatest benefit. But in that, diplomacy is used, other things, you have other countries, they're trying to take care of their people, they want your facility for their people, you want their facility. So you have to deal nicely. But the idea is that the basic human needs must be addressed. Mm-hmm. Right? So then that becomes difficult if it's simply there's us and them. Mm-hmm. Because it's not us and them. You go to them, and in their mind, they're us. Mm-hmm. And we're them. Because everybody is human and everybody has the same basic needs. Mm-hmm. Right? You're saying emotional and social and all these different needs. So the difficulty comes is that is finding that balance. You know? So naturally then some people will be able to be more expert at this in a good way, and they create a very nice, comfortable environment. Others may be very expert at this way, more self-centered, or more from the economic point of view, then that'll be more of a problem. Because when you're dealing with pure economics, you can deal with economics without actually addressing the individual. Mm-hmm. As long as it makes money, it's good enough. Mm-hmm. So then, taking that into consideration is that those who have grips and understand economics and are able to control it, they may be able to do so much, but they have to understand there's a limit to how much control economics has. There's a limit to how much they can manipulate or deal with the laws of nature, because ultimately there are laws. You know, gravity's there, this, that. So human nature, there's laws that govern it. Mm-hmm. So it's not that you're going to have, you know, one group that rules everything in the world. They can't, because that would take someone who understands everything about the world to do. Mm-hmm. So actually only a very, you know, properly educated person who knows the proper application of the political methods and economics and knows how to deal with the individuals of the citizens could have that position. Mm-hmm. So that means others can get a small corner of it, mm-hmm. a big, you know, maybe a big chunk, mm-hmm. but, and there's always going to be groups fighting with each other. So this idea that there's one group of persons that runs everything can't exist, because it won't function with the laws,
right.
like that. They may have figured it, so someone comes in from more political, they get a corner there. Someone more for economics, they get a corner there. Someone from different aspects of economics. Mm-hmm. You know, someone's more the business stock, someone's more entertainment, someone's more this, someone's more that. Mm-hmm. So in this way, they build their empires and that, and the ones that are more understanding of the workings of the principles are more quiet, you hear about them less, and so therefore then these theories come up that there's the whole conspiracy. So these kind of elements then one has to understand that actually you're dealing with, you know, the laws of nature. And so that governs economics, that governs politics, that governs, you know, knowledge and the intellect, that governs human need.
Mm-hmm.
So to understand that, that is actually what brings all these different aspects together. So there's no need of there being a disturbance by having a well-organized, you know, social or even international system.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to be based on the balance of understanding all these principles, which are natural laws of nature.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're discussing this base of knowledge which must underlie, you know, leadership class. So on what basis do we sort between who to hear from and what constitutes a proper source of knowledge? And as a corollary, how much credence do we lend to modern historians who paint a picture of those economic and political and social forces that shape the world as we know it today?
It depends, because the historian is naturally going to have a perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily, see, you have facts. The generally is taken that the facts are the actual history. But more important is the perspective, because it's not facts facts may generate an experience, but it's the experience that we take as real. You know what I'm saying? You have a war, that's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a war going on somewhere in the world now, so it's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't bother you or me.
Mm-hmm.
So unless we have a particular feeling about it, then it may bother us. But if the war is happening here, then the fact about the war is that we are emotionally affected by it. So the reality is actually the perspective.
Right.
Some people, a war is a great economic boon. Others, it's a complete disaster.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends on the perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So then the difficulty is that the historians, they have their particular perspective that they're using. Either it's their own perspective or it's what's accepted in their circles, that they will be published, they will actually get their grants, they will get these things. So then you have to know what is their perspective. And from that, then draw out that aspect. You know what I'm saying? That aspect is a value. Other aspects may not be at all. Like, it may be a value that they have the history of how, okay, the Spanish conquistadors went to South America and dealt with the locals there and conquered them, took their wealth and brought it back to Spain. Those are factual, and it's dealing with actually the mentality of the Spanish. But what was the mentality of the Incas? That's left out in history. So that you can't say that everything was fine. No, it may have been fine for the Spanish, but it was not necessarily fine for the local people. So then you have to know is, okay, this is how the Spanish thought, this was their motives, this is what they did. You know, and it was either more or less successful, depending upon their political or economic, you know, method. But then, what effect it had on the social structure that was there locally, because they went there basically for wealth. They got their wealth, but it did not in any way sustain the local culture. So the wealth they got was not sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just they went out, got some money, and came back. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of money, so they're still talking about it in the history books.
Mm-hmm.
But the point, what they miss is those people generated that money that the people in Spain didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So that means those Incas knew something more about long-term economics,
right,
and social structure than the Spanish knew about.
Right.
So if the Spanish went there, found out how wealthy they were, found out how it is that they're able to run a culture that has that kind of wealth. You know, I'm talking about the economics, not that they're sitting there and having human sacrifices. I'm talking about their economics.
Mm-hmm.
Then you could say, well, maybe there's something more there that we could learn from them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You know, what is a value in their structure that might be useful?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how is it they have such a strong political base? The only difference was is the others had, you know, weapons that they didn't have. But if it wasn't for that, if the Spanish went in there with their swords or their bows and arrows, they may not have been so successful. So Therefore, there was plenty to also more to learn. So the history then only dealt with part of history. So in, this, so in that way, then one goes in and pulls something from the history. Mm-hmm. Like that. But that means oneself needs to be educated, so then that's where the problem comes in. So, mm-hmm. in other words, unless one understands the principles on which the world functions, it'll be actually hard to understand how to perceive things.
Right. But given the nature of our defective senses, how can we know for certain whether this is a fact or not when it's all hearsay coming through so many channels?
One of the ways of looking at it is practical. Mm-hmm. Does it actually work in a sustainable way? Mm-hmm. Because the law of nature is sustainable. Mm-hmm. Like that. You know, the forest left in its natural state remains. Man goes in and deals with it not in the proper way, mm-hmm. then it's not sustainable. Mm-hmm. But the problem is man, not the nature. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the elements to check. Is it actually sustainable? Mm-hmm. You know, someone grows something in the field that is something that people need. He gets it to a place where people who need it can access it. Mm-hmm. And they have a medium of, an economic, monetary medium mm-hmm. by which they both are comfortable with, mm-hmm. then economics happen. And it can go on anywhere, like that. If you're going to take it into more artificial, then the nature of it has to be seen. Mm-hmm. You know, it's still going to work like what people need. So when you take economics into the area of something people don't require, then your advertisement and others, you have to make them want it. So that may work or may not work. You know, so you're on a roll that works now, but tomorrow it doesn't work. Everybody wants to buy a house, but then something happens in the economy, no one wants to buy a house. Everybody needs a house. So it's something they need, but somehow or another it's being projected in a way that's artificial. So even though they need it, they can't get at it. So it's not being made actually available to what people need. So there's some artificial aspect of it. There's some law that's not being followed. So you can see if it's working. That's working. It's working. It's sustainable. It's been there. That's what I expect. And why that is there is because that's come from people who have dealt with it. Mm-hmm. And there's something handed down in tradition. So it's an important element, though, you know, sometimes somebody new in the field or the youth avoid this, thinking that's something they can't understand. But it's a matter of whether they got to the root of it and can explain it. Some do it because it works, they don't know why, that'll be a problem. But it's not that it's not good, it's a matter of if it's working, check it out, why it's working. Mm-hmm. If they can't explain it, find out yourself. Mm-hmm. If they say you should do it, it doesn't work, then that's something you can consider. Well, maybe it worked at one point, but because people don't know why it's working, it's actually adjusted from what it originally was. So now it's actually not what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. But if we take it a step further, then these laws and all that, then we have the element that this element of tradition and being handed down then goes back. We have these ancient cultures who have more of an understanding of these laws because they were more in touch with them. Mm-hmm. And you go back in the Vedic culture, then that was very much tuned in to understanding these principles. You know, in other words, what are the laws of nature? In other words, there's a superior force that is, otherwise why is everything working so smoothly? It means if you take the human element out, it works very nicely. You know, the sun, the stars, everything moves according to clockwork. You know, the nature works fine. The human element's the only one that doesn't, because the human element has the choice whether they want to recognize these superior forces or not. Mm-hmm. So that makes for the elevation of human life or not. Mm-hmm. Right? The human life can elevate itself, mm-hmm. or the human life can not. Like that. So that's the naming of progressive, that it's in law, in line with these laws that is that are established by superior authority. So now there are persons who have contemplated this from this angle, and seeing this, they see the connection between the practical effect of applying the laws coming from the superior authority. So they see all of them. They see the spiritual, the metaphysical, and the physical. Mm-hmm. Right? And so having that completeness, then you get a much more balanced, you know, social, economic, you know, function. So that's why then, that's what's actually being given in these, you know, Vedic literatures, that proper balance. Though even that, if it's not seen in that light, can be taken and be made very, you know, specific for a particular group of persons. But it's working on universal principles.
So given what we understand of Vedic economics, to what forces would you attribute today's global recession and financial collapse?
Means is there's a natural desire by everyone to be able to be prosperous and move forward, you know, to become good at what they're doing and do it as nicely as they can. So, but if you do that by, how you say, disturbing someone else's performance of that, it's a problem. It's a real problem. So that means you have to have an economic system where you can be prosperous and I can be prosperous. The modern system is I'm prosperous because you're not. Right? In other words, let's say you take the stock market. Someone's making money because someone else is losing it. It's not that someone's making a little bit of money, someone's making more money. No, someone's losing it, therefore you're making it. That's how it functions. So, in other words, you're not necessarily adding anything more to the economic system. You're simply fighting over what's there. Mm-hmm. While the natural system is things that people require are produced in abundance. Everybody has them. So therefore, even your luxury items don't cost very much. But when you're dealing with luxury items that aren't really necessary for the human being, then that's where it becomes difficult, because all the manufacturing production of that requires that you have the minimal amount of people involved, buy it for the cheapest minimal amount of people involved in it, and you can sell it for the maximum. But because you're using minimal amount of people to produce it, that means there's going to be people who aren't, one, producing anything, and don't have any money to buy any your production with. Mm-hmm. So if you have 40% unemployment, that means 40% of your people aren't adding anything to the system, and at the same time don't have the money to actually make the system run. So the system is only running on 60% of the people. Mm-hmm. So that's a problem. It should be it's running on 100% of the people. Mm-hmm. That's sustainable. Otherwise, you see that the market has problems. So when people are locally producing things themselves, you have the minimal amount of people in any one given economic exchange. But everybody's engaged in an economic exchange. So everybody's producing something valued by something else, whether it's in the way of knowledge, it's in the way of culture, you know, the political field, you know, protection, and, you know, meaning protection meaning your police, your, you know, judicial systems, your armies, your these kind of things, economic system, you know, your Vedic, your skilled trades and all that, your arts, all these different things. Everybody has something that's valued. You know what I'm saying? The actor can act or can sing, and the man with some money likes to hear good music so they can get together. But it's not that you have to have one guy has to do a music concert for 100,000 people. He can do a concert in somebody's private home with his family. But because everybody's producing, everything is very simple. It's not as expensive. Therefore, how much that family can actually afford to maintain that guy. You know what I'm saying? And what they give him, he can maintain himself. They can afford it, he can maintain it. So it's not so exclusive. So that means your culture and everything is more available. Right? It's not that it hasn't always been like this. People were there. They're manufacturing from the land, but the people in the positions of authority would tax them greater than they could. So with that, they could run their wars and catch another kingdom, but they can't maintain it. Otherwise, the borders in, let's say, a place like Europe have changed hands so many times. You know, the people are still there in the same place, but what you call the country keeps moving. You know? So it's not that it really works. So if you run it less, then there is everything else. Everybody is working like that, and then it works. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, then it's a problem.
So does the Vedic system advocate more grassroots local empowerment rather than centralized management from somewhere?
You have to have both. Mm-hmm. The point is it can't be one at the extreme from the other. That's what happens. Is if we say grassroots and everybody says that, then all the guys that actually run things on a very large, on the national or international scale, what do? Because they have that ability. They also need money. They have to make money. At the same time, as if you say it's just international, then they completely ignore the grassroots, and it works for some time. Like, how much time can they keep clearing a forest in Brazil before there's no forest? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Then what are they going to do with their industry? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So these kind of things, they have to figure out how to balance it more. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So you have to have both. Mm-hmm. You have to have both. There's always going to be the national level of economics functioning, but that should be functioning in a way that it protects the grassroots level. Mm-hmm. And the grassroots is the source, basically, of most everything that's used on the national level.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. In that light, what would you say is the Vedic definition of prosperity?
Basically, that everybody has, according to their nature, a comfortable lifestyle. That would require proper knowledge. You know, the political system has to be proper, the economic system has to be proper, their own personal lives, they have to know actually how to deal. You know, because otherwise you may have all facility, but you don't know how to actually interact with your wife and children, and so you'll have a problem. You know, otherwise many wealthy persons with lots of facility, they still have problems with that. So it's not they're still not happy. So happy is, you could probably define it when relationships that they are actually have to deal with, you know, in the family, community, economic, political, all these, they actually know how to deal, and they're comfortable in that. Mm-hmm. You know, as much as can, there's always going to be ups and downs, but yeah, at least basically you can say they're comfortable. Mm-hmm. And that would be your proper prosperity.
But concerning precious metals versus, you know, basic necessities and...
But precious metals are part of the thing. They're also part of a necessity. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want opulence, they're a necessity. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not that if you just eat, then that's that. Otherwise, that's an animal's life. Mm-hmm. The point of human life is there's some refinement, some development. So even the simple farmer, you know, still has his nicer clothes or tries to do something nicer with his house or, you know, do some... You know, there's that still that simple aspect. So it's a matter of just how much sophistication is there than what's required. Precious metals aren't the problem. It's things that aren't necessarily precious that are made into something.
Then, regarding, you know, monetary policy and currency, is it all tied to a gold standard?
It wouldn't necessarily be a gold standard. It'd be tied to something of value. Mm-hmm. You know? So therefore, if it was working on bartering, you're bartering things of value. If you needed to work on a system where you couldn't necessarily bring the cow into the market like that, then you can work on something else, gold, silver, something that's commonly understood as value. Mm-hmm. So both of them work, but the point is it's a value. But if you just say it's a value and everyone agrees it's a value, it works as long as everyone agrees. Mm-hmm. But that's the problem with it. It's simply based on agreement. Mm-hmm. That's why the modern economics has its ups and downs. Something happens in the world situation that disturbs people. So because they're disturbed, they become insecure. When they're insecure, they don't invest. They don't buy. They don't do anything. Mm-hmm. So that means that your whole market flops because your market has to move.
Mm-hmm.
Unless there's movement. I have a cauliflower. Unless I move it to the person who's going to buy it, it rots. My economics fails.
Mm-hmm.
So movement is important. So unless the market is moving, volume is there by however much you're dealing with, then it collapses. So when people stop involving themselves, it collapses.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So that's what happened. 9/11 happens. It collapses. Something on it collapses. Something it just. So in other words, the people's faith in it stops. So they don't invest in real estate because they think the bottom's going to drop out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they need the land, but they won't invest.
Mm-hmm.
So then. So that's the difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
It's based actually on faith, but it's faith in something artificial rather than faith in the natural, you know, laws of God.
Mm-hmm.
So economics is a law of God.
Mm-hmm.
It has its methods. If you see it in that light, it's very established.
Mm-hmm. And can you speak on the perspective towards usury or lending at interest? What is that perspective?
Lending at interest is that it can be done, but it should be within interest that people can actually afford.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, the whole structure is in other words, you simplify, not wind down, because it still has to move. But in other words, what it costs to what it's sold at has to be closer.
Mm.
Right, because the more maximum people that are involved, the more it's there. Just like when I came to India, the difference, let's say, in high-grade sugar and low-grade sugar was 10 to 15 paisa.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's, you know, can be 5, 10 rupees, and still you can't get the really good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But before is opulent stuff was very available because it was affordable. And so therefore means the luxury item may not have been used by a common person, but a common person was making it and making profit off of it and living his life comfortably.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But now it's that the luxury item only it's so separated from natural, you know, position of human need that therefore only very few can afford it. That means the market becomes very small, very few common people are involved in producing it. Therefore, it doesn't make any money for anybody. Yeah. It becomes more and more expensive.
Right.
And eventually it disappears. So it's a problem. So when things are of value and are valued, in other words, things that people actually need, it should be there. And like saffron is more expensive than gold. Like that, but if it's so important, it can be more produced.
Mm-hmm.
Then everybody can, whoever values it, can have it.
Mm-hmm.
Point is not to have money; it's to have what you want to get with the money. So if you can get what you need for cheaper, what's the problem?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can go on your cruise, you know, on the ocean, you know, and it doesn't cost you $100,000 to do it,
mm-hmm.
you know, you could do it for $1,000. What would you care?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I only got $1,000 for this, my world cruise. That's all the cost.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So the point is not how much you have, it's what you can do with it.
Mm-hmm.
So as people have more money now, but what they can do with it is very minimal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily improved. A few people, it seems they've improved, but those people have always been there.
Mm-hmm.
You've always had people with lots of wealth. But no one cares if someone has a lot of wealth as long as I'm comfortable. Right? The common person doesn't care that the celebrity has a big house and car and all, as long as they're comfortable. They only complain when they have nothing to eat and the celebrity still has all that. People don't mind that there's differences. But it has to be that they're protected, they're comfortable. You know, you see someone like that are very successful in business and do something very unique that's sustainable. You take someone like, you know, this man Hershey's, you know, chocolate manufacturer. He would build a whole town and create all kinds of systems to support his workers. So the whole town just makes chocolate and they look like that. Or you have this guy Bhakta, I think he's Czech. You know, he does shoes and he would do the same thing. So it wasn't just economics. The human element was there. They'd take care of their people and do all these different things. So their business has been going a long time. So these kind of these are things that work. They work.
So to the common person who's feeling so much insecurity and fear and uncertainty over their economic future, to what advice would you give this individual?
Means the point is what it means if they're comfortable with themselves, then what does it matter what others think? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if they have an economic situation in which they can't afford all the fancy fashion stuff and latest stuff, then if they're comfortable with that, you know, I have what I need, and you find friends that have the same understanding, you're comfortable. It's what it is. You, your family, your friends, you know, if you're comfortable, then what do you care about anybody else? So the thing is because of advertisements and all, you think that I have to have this, otherwise I'm useless, I'm a nobody. Then there's the anxiety of getting that, and the money for that, and all these different things. But if it's not there, it's just like you go in Africa in a tribe, then you're considered wealthy by how many pots you have. So then every woman in her house wants her husband to get more pots. You know? She's not asking for an iPod or a Bentley or anything like that. She wants pots. So it's whatever you establish is important. That's what you endeavor for. So if it's something within your natural sphere of what you're comfortable living and your needs, therefore, then what's the problem? So if somebody wants to go for all these things, great. But he's not in anxiety because he's focused on it, he's working for it, he's getting it. So if people focus on what actually works for them, and don't worry about what anybody else thinks. It means worry, meaning in the way of for your own security, not meaning that socially you don't care, so therefore you don't deal with them nicely, you drop all your social etiquettes. No, you maintain your etiquettes and all that. What does it matter?
So for those...
Same applies besides the economics into their religion or anything else that they... You know, so.
There's another class of political dissidents who fear that their security and their even basic needs will be pushed to the point of destitution, more or less, that they're rendering America into a third world country, more or less, and they're seeking overthrow of the powers that be to protect these basic needs.
Okay, but you want to overthrow, but do you have the political ability an economic ability to restructure and recreate a whole society? Mm-hmm. If you can't, then it won't work. You know, it's just like you had Russia. You had somebody, the country was prosperous and everything like that. They just had a tendency to try to expand their empire, even though it was so big. And they were constantly having these little wars in which I think between the father, the father and son, 7 million people had died. They then some people had this mentality. They created a revolution. They took over the government and all that. And then it officially 20 million people died by this new government. And somehow or another, that's okay. 7 million was, you know, not okay. Then they were able to, administratively control the situation quite nicely, quite strongly. But they economically didn't have any ability. And so it ran for some time until it just completely collapsed. And it completely collapsed because it wasn't actually running that good in the first place. So they didn't actually have the ability. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is those persons who are agitating, nice, but do they have the ability to restructure and do everything? They may say, but it's a very big thing to run millions of people, you know. To give you an example of America, you know, 300 million people. Mm-hmm. Such diverse aspects in the culture and situations and that, and managing cities. And so it's more of a matter of the motive of those involved You know what I'm saying? Because politically, it's a very strong system. Mm-hmm. Like that. But the motives behind it, that you have to see. Like that. It says on the money, in God we trust. So if they trust in God, then they would deal in a way that would show that. They'd follow God's laws. Mm-hmm. You know, the economics could be more stable. You know what I'm saying? So the just revolting, because if you go to the mass doesn't know how to run it. The mass only knows how to, you know, try themselves to make their own life work. And they're willing to work under authority. So now if you, to get the mass riled up against the authority, basically you have to break down the concept of authority. Once you've broken it down, they may then work with you, being a revolutionary, to break down the government. And because they're mass, so they can overtake the small volume of the government. But once they've taken it over, they've done that because they broke down the respect for that. Now, you're the, as the revolutionaries now, you become the government, but now you're authority. Why should the mass care for you now? Because you've broken down authority. Mm-hmm. What happened to Robespierre? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the same people that cut off, you know, Louis XVI's head, cut off his head. Mm-hmm. Because the point is, you're going to say, you know, you're suffering, you don't have enough, this, that. But can they guarantee that there's always going to be? Because you're hyping them up that you could live like they're living, but you can't. Everybody can't live like they're living. There's going to be stratas. But the point is, if everybody's protected and everybody's having a good emotional and sensual, you could say, experience, who cares? You know, the boy's with his girlfriend, and he's having a nice interaction. He feels comfortable. He likes this girl. What does he care that, you know, there's some big fancy model off with some other big celebrity or guy? He doesn't care. As long as he has a nice interaction with the girl he's with. You know what I'm saying? So the whole idea is that if they break down authority to have this revolution, they've broken down authority. Without authority, you can't establish anything. You have to have authority. Economics requires authority. Administration requires authority. Knowledge requires authority. Even arts and crafts require authority. You know, so it's not a good method. Mm-hmm. The revolutionary means you have to, the revolution has to start within the individual. Mm-hmm. If you are able to change yourself and your mentality, you can change others' mentality. That's the real revolution. It's not a political revolution. It's not an economic revolution, right? It's a revolution of understanding, of self-realization. You understand who you are, you're comfortable. Right? What's the difference between the person who's insecure and the person who's not secure? The person who's not, I mean, who's secure, it's comfortable. The person who's insecure is not comfortable. So if you, and because they have a self-identity and they works. Now if something changes, then that identity doesn't work anymore. They become insecure. But therefore, if you work on universal principles, you'll always be secure because there's nothing within the material nature that can make you insecure. Because you're working on principles higher than that. Does that make sense? So then if you really want to create a revolution, yes, it's through knowledge, it's through awareness, but it's not by changing the system, it's by changing yourself. You know what I'm saying? You had, let's say you had the mayors in New York. They're going along, it's going along, but you know, the nature of the people are changing and the law and order is going down and it's becoming more difficult. Then one man comes in and, you know, he has a different approach, a different mood, and he changes the whole thing. He takes it from, you know, the 1990s, you know, as far as law and order goes, you know, of crime, back to the 50s. You know, it's got as, how much crime was there in the 50s instead of how much crime was there in the 90s? Just because his value system was different. That was important for him. Mm-hmm. So therefore he made it happen. So there's plenty of qualified people already in the institutions and systems that are already in place. It's just a matter if there's something going wrong, it's their mentality. It's their actual understanding of the eternal, you know, laws of God. Mm-hmm. So if someone is self-realized and understands these laws, then it doesn't matter. They can stay in the same position and now do it nicely, mm-hmm. in a more broader, more in more harmony with everything. Because mm-hmm. otherwise, if you open with history, if they study history, these revolutions never really worked. You know what I'm saying? America was a revolution. Russia was based on if there's constant revolution, there's constant development. It didn't work. It's in peace where there's prosperity. You know what I'm saying? War is to establish, to protect your people from an outside influence, you know, or to create facilities for your people. But it itself is not security. Because war, you never know which way it'll go. Peace is secure. Then everybody can function. They feel safe. Economics works. When people feel safe, economics goes up. When people don't feel safe, economics drops. So if you want everything to go right, you have to create a safe environment. That means there has to be proper knowledge and proper administration. Then economics and everything else, the arts, everything, all the refined things of life will develop out of that.
How would you answer the slogan that religion is the opiate of the masses, because religious authorities proceed with a great deal of skepticism today?
But any authorities is viewed with skepticism. You know what I'm saying? You know, you could say, you know, video games are the opiate of the masses. You can say anything, and then the idea that you're going to be special and unique because you bought this brand. So consumerism is a, you know, opiate of the people. You know what I'm saying? Sense gratification is the opiate of the people. The point is this, people being happy is not a problem. People being ignorant is a problem. So religion is supposed to help in defining knowledge, who you are, what is the creation and all that. If it's used in that way, then why, what's the problem? Like that. If it's used for political purposes, if it's used for one's own, you know, religious sense, because I'm this religion, therefore I'm good and everybody else is bad, so if they want to be good, they have to follow my religion, then it's political. It's self-centered. The point is religion means what is the inherent nature of something you can't change. That's religion. Right? It's not a set of rituals. Right? It's what means, in other words, means the example is given like sugar. Its inherent religion or nature is sweetness. You take out the sweetness, you don't call it sugar. Water is wet. Fire gives heat and light. So that means human nature, there's an inherent nature of it. And it's part of this creation. Human nature means the human being can perceive what's beyond themselves. So they can understand that there's higher laws, there's higher authority, there's higher forces, there's, you know, something that is there. And so religion is supposed to show who are you, who is God, what is this world. That's what it's supposed to show. So if they can't explain who God is, who you are, or how this world functions in relationship to that, then they have a problem. So to the degree they can explain that, to that degree that religion is developed. But it doesn't mean that it's any less of a religion if it's defining that. But it has to factually work. You know what I'm saying? So it can be taken, because otherwise this thing, opiate of the people, is very nice. The guy's sitting in his room writing stuff. Did Marx ever manage something? Did he ever run a country? Did he ever do any of that? He was an intellectual, sat in a room. Sounds nice, but he made it up himself. Where is it based on? You know what I'm saying? Where was it based on? Mm-hmm. Like that. People have to be inspired. They're inspired when they know who they are, what their relationships are. Their relationships are stable and steady. That makes them comfortable. So religion defines the whole framework in which all your economic, social, and everything else functions. But the problem is if it's used politically or economically, that's a problem. That's not what it's for. It's for the individual's development of their own personal self-realization. That's what it's for. That doesn't cost any money.
So, if there was such a strong understanding of economic laws historically, how come Brahminical culture was subverted? Was it done from within or without?
I would say Brahminical means it'll be done from within. That those who are in a position of, let's say, religious or intellectual authority, if they're not themselves trying to develop, if they're not constant students, right, then how can they actually deliver? Just like a person who's a good businessman is involved in business. As soon as he stops doing business, whatever he's talking about isn't what's going on at present. So his ability will become less and less and less valuable. You know, so then his son also doesn't do business. He just has the money. So then if you ask him about business, he'll have nothing to say, though they're known as business people. So it becomes less and less connected with reality. So the problem is that the leaders in the religious and intellectual fields can't actually explain God's creation and the individual's position in it. You know, God, his creation, that. Therefore, people then turn to some other alternative. They can't tell me. I'll try to work it out with my senses, so you get science. But that doesn't answer everything either. Because it doesn't answer why we're people, why we have emotions, why we have needs. It doesn't answer that. So it's a problem. So when they don't do this but claim to have the same authority, then people, you know, those that have, you know, are more faithful and simple, it will work. But those who are more intelligent will see that there's something wrong here. So they question. But the problem is losing faith in the whole principle of religion. And knowledge. Then that's not very good either. You know what I'm saying? You've eaten food, you got sick, now you have no faith in food, so you don't eat food, now you'll die. Before you were sick, but you get rid of it, you'll die. So that's the problem, is that you get rid of all these things, then the whole thing is finished. Yeah. So now they're seeing is that they went to such an extreme of secular that then nobody has any values. Where do you get values from? Why shouldn't you steal? Why shouldn't you lie? Where's it from? It's from religion. Right? Because these are higher laws that govern how human beings work. Animals steal, they do whatever they want. And it works as an animal. But if you want to be human, it must rise to a higher position. So that means you have to follow these laws, so they come from God. So that's why you should do these things.
Mm-hmm. Next, I'd like to ask about education, and specifically the relationship between modern education and the economic system and the forces that shape our present-day economies. So what is the origin of modern schooling, and what is its purposes and aims?
Oh, some will then define that. You have economics. Previous to the Industrial Revolution, then you had a farm, you had some land, or you had some other form that you know, either cows, land, business, banking, something that you were dealing with. But you as an enlightened individual, you know, are well-read in things and all that. You had your personal values and all that, and you made your money. In other words, you were an individual that was important, and you had the economics to be able to maintain your lifestyle. But with the Industrial Revolution, with that coming, where your business becomes the more prominent of all, rather than the other aspects, then that being prominent, then the tendency is that you're going to try to manufacture something because you're not dealing with the individual anymore. You're simply dealing with the economics of it. Right? In other words, instead of I'm an individual and economics support that, It's that you're simply looking at economics. So if I have money, I am an individual, right? That makes me, it's that money. So then the tendency will be that when you go into factories and other things like that, that kind of enlightened person is not comfortable, right? Because he has land, he moves around, he gets on his horse, he has his house, he has his country home, he has this and that, he visits relatives. He moves, he has varieties of things. So his occupation has some variety in it. You know, you have a carpenter. He's always making furniture, but every time it's a different piece of furniture and made in a different way because everybody's an individual and wants their furniture. They want their cabinet different, their chair different. Mm-hmm. So there's some variety. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it works nicely. You know, so you're farming and so you're out there and each season is different, what you're planting is different, the methods of planting may be different, how you take care of it's different, the results you get are different. It creates variety, so there's an interest for the living being. Because mm-hmm. human beings need variety. So, but the problem is factories have no variety. You do one thing day in, day out, and that's all you do. So it's not actually, it's great for a robot, but it's not good for a human. So if you're going to have human beings be able to sit behind a desk or behind a machine all day and do the same thing, then you have to have a experience in which you train them or condition them to that. Mm-hmm. So your modern education does that. Mm-hmm. The kid sits at a plain old desk with nothing there in a plain old room. The only thing is maybe the teacher will put some things on the wall if you're in first or third grade. You know, like that. But after that, they're pretty plain. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that prepares you to sit in that kind of environment. Anyone who's smart enough to know that this is not where it's at, then they're the ones that run the system. Mm-hmm. But most people don't, so they just fit in. Mm-hmm. And so it works very nicely. Mm-hmm. You know, so it prepares you to make money in that system. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily geared at the personal development and enlightenment of the individual. Mm-hmm. You know, it's geared at producing someone who fits into the social economic situation that's there and doesn't. Mm-hmm. And so it does quite well, but the problem is because that's not addressing the human need, therefore there's a problem. Mm-hmm. There's a problem.
We have about 3 minutes. One critique of the Vedic system of education is that it tends to stratify the children into different classes, and it can stultify one's personal development by slotting them into, you know, these pigeonholes.
Like pigeonholes means like you have to learn science in junior high and high school to get into medical school, and then when you get out of medical school, you have a medical degree, and then you're stuck with that. If you wanted to be a lawyer, you have to start all over again. Pigeonholing like that, you're talking about? Like that. The whole point is that no, it's based on one's inherent nature. So if the system is not based on nature but on birth or one's social background, that's then not proper, that's not Vedic education. Mm-hmm. Vedic education is someone's trained according to their personal need. Someone's has an economic background, economic interest, he's trained in economics, he'll do well there, he'll like his job. Mm-hmm. You know? So it depends what it is, then he'll be trained accordingly. That's Vedic. According to their nature, according to their ability, that's how they're trained. The modern does the same thing, just they hide it and just make it sound that they use euphemisms. But otherwise, you know, you want to get into a particular school, you have to get certain grades. Mm-hmm. You know, so that means you're pigeonholed into that.
So one critique of even the modern schooling is that it's wresting children away from their homes, putting them in the hands of these strangers, and more or less, you know, compelling them to submit for, you know, 12, 13 years of forced schooling. So how would the Vedic system view that removal from the family, removal from the community?
And teachers are part of the community, part of the family. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that means they're teaching about life, because family is life, so they're teaching life. So part of that is knowledge and skills that they'll use in their life. Mm-hmm. Right? So therefore, mother, father, and teacher are part of how you get trained. Because there's always going to be authority. There's always going to be somebody different. When you're born, you only know your mother. So father's a new introduction. Mm-hmm. And then you have brothers and sisters, and then there's aunts and uncles, and then there's all these other things. So there's always new introductions. So teacher's not a new thing. It's a matter of the teacher there's only teaching academics and has no real relationship with you. That's a problem. Mm-hmm. But the teacher has relationship, they're working for your benefit, they're training you in something that's according to your nature, that's useful for you in your life, that's not a problem at all.
Thank you very much for your time today. I appreciate
you speaking to us. Now. No, that's this. It's just off the air. This idea that we wouldn't know how to deal with modern man. Mm-hmm. Who's this? Mm-hmm. It was only because you kept pushing me yesterday that I started talking about God. I can talk about the Vedic stuff and the philosophy without even bringing him into it.
Yes.
You know, so this idea is that, you know, we wouldn't know how to talk to someone in New York. Mm-hmm. You just have to tell us that, you know, they've gotten so weird and so bad. It's not that it's that's easy. Mm-hmm. You understand?
Yes.
Because you're dealing intellectually. They have difficulty with it because they only know how to do it. They're practicing Krishna consciousness because of their religious sentiment. Mm-hmm. So therefore, they're dealing with the people. If they're not dealing with Hare Krishna or anything like that, they're dealing still with sentiment, therefore the new age stuff. But the point is, if you're dealing with intelligence, you can deal in philosophy or, you know, in the culture or anywhere in your life. It's no problem because you're not dealing with something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I noticed that you're dealing very skillfully, but without putting God in the picture, but just on the basis of the laws of nature, the indisputable.
Yeah. And so I didn't know what was the scope of this, so I got the idea that we weren't supposed to be near there. Like that, if I know there's more, I would have introduced it earlier. Mm-hmm. But so, you know, that kind of element is just a matter of you can explain it. That's what people, smart people, practical people, it has to be explained. Mm-hmm. The problem is modern religionists, they can't explain it, including the devotees. The New Age devotees can't explain Jack. You know, it's all, oh, be good, be nice. Well, why be good, be nice? Who said? Mm-hmm. Well, why? Just because you said it, or your friend said, well, why do I have to be good? Mm-hmm. Why do I have to be, what is good? Mm-hmm. Why is it your good? Why is it not my good? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So where is the authority? So it has to come from God. That's religion. Mm-hmm. So they think they're talking about religion, but they're talking about sub-religion, upadana. Oh, your world religions, all they talk about is upadana. None of them will deal with religion. Religion is, who's God, who are you, what's the material nature, what's your relationship? And therefore, what social system, you know, you'll use in interacting with others who are in the same system. That's religion. That they don't deal with. They deal with something. Be nice, be good, you know, support the kids, support the women's rights. You know, this one's rights, that one's rights. Where is rights coming from? Who defines rights? Mm-hmm. God defines rights. If anybody else other than God defines it, then it's not religion.
But it's not only about rights, it's the focus is on duty. It's on,
but you know, duty is there.
Positive duty.
Yes. Yes, but duty, that who defines what's duty? Is my duty I can step on you? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like that. You know, I want to sit over there. It means I'm like, oh, hey, come. Here, come. Sit down. You're my friends. Here. Why are you standing? You know? Is that, that's duty. I'm taking care of my friends.
Yeah.
But that wasn't religion.
Yeah.
Because you're also sitting there.
Yeah.
That's the whole point, is that to support the kids, they got to screw everybody else.
Yeah.
To support the women, they got to screw everybody else. When it comes to the cows in there, they also try to screw everybody.
Yeah.
And you watch, you give it another 10 years, because of the old men, they're going to be screwing everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But in no time are they dealing with real religion, real human life. Human life means you should have been dealing with this all along.
Mm-hmm.
If you had been taking care of the kids, and when you're old, they'll want to take care of you. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you get all. Who cares for these old dogs? Yeah. Who's going to care that this GBC man, you know, can't do anything anymore? That nobody cares. Mm-hmm. If they personally know you and that, they'll take care. But in general, nobody takes care because nobody cares. There's no idea of that. Mm-hmm. So that's the whole thing, is that it's not human culture. So therefore, it's not religion. Because human culture is religion. Varnashram, that's religion. If it's not Varnashram, it's not religion. It's sub-religion. And so, therefore, it's based on justice, economics, and ethics, mm-hmm. which is good stuff. Mm-hmm. But that being applied without God consciousness and without understanding God's laws of justice and all this, and where they fit in, mm-hmm. that simply make a mess. Right. Since the mid-90s, when they've tried to really apply all this nice touchy-feely stuff, the social system hasn't improved. Mm-hmm. The trust, nothing's improved. So, therefore, it's not working. Why? Because it's not actually religion. It's sub-religion. And then even if sub-religion, they're still not using Vedic. They're trying to use some modern. Each one has their own idea. Mm-hmm. They'll all get together to fight against it. Once they've gotten out the leadership, then they'll fight with each other, right? The Afghanis. If the Russians are there, they'll all get together and fight against the Russians. But as soon as you get rid of the Russians, then they start killing each other. Mm-hmm. So like that. They'll never get it. They can't. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. Because they don't know the laws of God, so they can't get anywhere. Mm-hmm. So the laws of God apply to devotees as much as non-devotees. The difference is devotees recognize them, non-devotees don't. Mm-hmm. If the non-devotees recognize them, they're called pious. Mm-hmm. But they're not God conscious. Mm-hmm. So devotees, you know, are naturally pious because the laws of God are written by God, so they follow them. Mm-hmm. But their intent is not to follow the laws, but to please God. Mm-hmm. So they're more interested in Him as a person, not for Him in His Brahman and Paramatma aspect. Mm-hmm. So therefore, whatever they do to please Him.
One other thing, how do you perceive these kind of propaganda efforts, TV, film, and such? I mean, that any revolution is based on, you know, the lights and the sounds and the sentiment and the aesthetics of the matter. So, how does that apply for ISKCON?
Using it.
Yeah.
They can use it nice, but then the devotees have to actually get it, present something that people will want to see. So they'd have to use up-to-date technique. But, you know, in other words, cutting edge technique and, you know, cutting edge of our philosophy.
Exactly.
You combine those two, they got something powerful. They can so easily do this stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's so easy. They got, you know, it's like sometimes I've seen, you know, one movie, you know, its whole big thing is because there's one truth about, you know, male-female interaction, you know, that is brought out, and that's played on throughout the whole film, and they got one.
Yeah.
And then they got to build a whole story around it, so it kind of becomes obscure.
Yeah.
And, you know...
I think I saw that.
Like that, you have so many of them, like that. Those will bring out, you know, more, you know... And sometimes, you know, the young guys say, no, you got to do this, but when the old guy says, no, but it's this, you know, then it's generally more real, you know? But where does it... It still doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is we could do, you know, so many movies on this stuff. But the guys that are into movies, you know, it's either economic or they're artists, and so therefore, you know, artists have to express themselves, and the economics just won't sell. they don't have any, you know, brains. You know, you took, what was that? That Pulp Fiction. That was the weirdest movie that ever came out in those days.
Yeah.
But it's like the basis of all other weirdo movies. Everybody uses stuff from there. Everybody goes back to that. So that could be said, but it worked.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, then that could serve as one role of the brahmachari, who's not dependent economically on his art, but can simultaneously produce.
Could, but then the problem is to get involved in that. It's more the hustler's business to do that, because they're dealing in the social area, so they should improve their understandings and their motives and do it. that would be harder for them to do. So it depends. Brahmacharis could do stuff that's within the realm of their lifestyle and all that. You know, they could make a whole, you know, the monastic series.
Or like that. Right. Or just, I mean, simply presenting our philosophy, though. I mean, that is a brahminical.
I mean, if it's a matter of more like knowledge. Documentary or this or that, yeah. or that kind of that, they could do very nice.
Right.
But if they want to do something that's, you know, more artsy with all the different things, that means a lot of money, people, and this and that.
Right.
So people were involved in that. But then why should we do it? People are already doing it. Preach to them. Get them to do it.
Hmm.
You know, it's like it's just like this. Okay, let us say music is affecting the lives of the youth of the world so strong. Okay. So now you can do one of two things. You can yourself try to become a big musician, or you can go preach to the big musicians. Okay, so how many devotees have ever become big musicians that have influenced the world? Okay, that's it. Okay, but we see an example of the devotees in England preaching to the Beatles, especially, you know, somehow to George Harrison, and him writing albums and doing stuff and having effect when they had his... it was an anniversary of his passing away. It was nothing to do with us. It was just musicians and what we saw that. They were chanting Hare Krishna because he chanted Hare Krishna. Right? And now, you know, Lennon, does anybody do anything for him? Nothing. You know, is Paul McCartney say has a few fans? Anybody cares? No. Ringo, who's anybody heard of? That's the first time I saw him since they broke up. So, why? Because they made him a devotee and he doesn't.
Yeah.
So this whole thing where we got to go out and become an Indologist, no, the time that you spend, how many years to become an Indologist? If you put in that same amount of hours and focus and that preaching to those guys, we would have by now, with that many man hours, we would have already started to change the system. But instead, our devotees become Indologists and are changed by the system.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Why do we have to?
So the principle is that it applies to all arts, but now you're extending it even to the field of indulgence.
Anything.
Except for teaching and pujari.
It's just like, why do we have to become the president of America? We preach to these guys.
Okay.
You know, who's preaching to those guys?
Right.
You know, I mean, Washington, D.C. is there. You know how many senators and everything are over there?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And people involved in it, you can preach to them.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? That changes the thing. But that's not, you know, it's like, you know, we got to fit in, so we got to get on a, you know, dumpy, you know, pants and t-shirt and, you know, and go down to Walmart, you know, and then we fit in. And then who cares and who's ever heard of the Hare Krishnas? I just had a devotee come from New York and say when he came into New York, they never heard of Hare Krishna. Oh, no, this was it. No, that wasn't that. This is a guy from New York. He grew up in New York, was a devotee in New York, been in India. He went back. Oh, excuse me, this is someone else. He was told by that. This is another devotee. He was in Times Square, right? Times Square is like the place. If you do Harinam, it's Times Square, right? Yeah, now this is the point. This devotee went into a shop there, dressed as a devotee. And the guy in the shop said, wow, who are you guys? He says, we're Hare Krishnas. Oh, yeah, no, I never heard of Hare Krishnas. But, you know, we never see you anymore. He says, no, Harinam and all this and that. He says, I've been working in this shop looking out this window for 6 years. I've never seen you guys come by. That means for 6 years, at least 6 years, devotees have not done Harinam. And somehow or another, that's great for the preaching. I don't know what. They think, oh, because people think badly of it. Who cares? They think you're a schmo anyway. You know? Depends who you ask.
Mm.
You know? So it's like, you know, what's the big deal? You know, this is what we do. We're famous for that. We're in movies not for wearing our t-shirt and going to Walmart. We wear our bed sheets and go through trains or, you know, public places. And that's where we're in the movies. Always some public place going by, looking in ecstasy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they don't have devotees doing it anymore. They have to hire karmas.
Right. But speaking within the scope of the Brahmacharya Ashram, for devotees who have a conditioned nature towards, you know, arts, talents like that. For them, should the focus still remain on the preaching and the Harinam and the Sankirtan? Or is it necessary for them to dovetail their,
if they can be satisfied in these other things, great. And if they can't, then they should dovetail.
Yeah.
Why not? The point is to be body, mind, and aware of the day. So yeah. They can do it with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Maharaj.
Should I go? Who knows? Maybe he'll come back in like a minute. I'm just going to wait 2 minutes.
So that would happen the last time.
Yeah, we'll just.
He's always calling once again. Say thank you. Goodbye. Otherwise,
should I start? Yeah,
positive.
Oh.
I was wondering how long it would take to put in the app. Because I brought it there before, pulled it down in front of everybody. You know what I mean?